Welcome back to the Breakside Podcast, here for episode 44. This is your ultimate destination for in-depth collegiate professional Frisbee discussions and interviews. I'm your host, David Adamitis. This episode's guest originally got into Ultimate Frisbee simply to stay in shape for college tennis, but he is now headed into his sixth season playing for the Philadelphia Phoenix, where he has led his team in receiving yards the past two seasons, introducing James Pollard. James, thanks for being here. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm just love this time of the year. You have a lot of college Frisbee going on, so you've had a lot of college players on. But in the background, UFA players are really gearing up for this upcoming season. You see teams out there posting, all their tryouts, the teams are practicing, and it's just you get this anticipation, this excitement that's coming into the spring, into the summer season. So I'm really happy you're here, and we're just going to dive into everything to do with, Philadelphia Phoenix and your story. But beginning, I said it there in the intro, we got to start with how you got into the sport, which is college tennis. So would you share with me, beginnings of your story with Ultimate Frisbee?
Yeah. It started in gym class in freshman or sophomore year high school. They just introduced us to it for a couple weeks. I thought it was fun. Started looking into the sport more and just kind of followed it. And then as I was applying to schools and got accepted to schools and looking where to go, I would see if they had club teams where I was applying, and Philadelphia University happened to have one. I was like, well, my coach doesn't care, because I was an athlete my whole life. I pretty much always was playing multiple sports. Before tennis, it was mainly basketball, baseball, and soccer. So I was like, I need something to do. I can't just do tennis a couple times a week and be done. I have to be doing something. So coach was fine with it. So when I could, if it didn't interfere, I would play on the club team. And more and more each year as I went, I started playing more and more ultimate, and it just took over after I graduated.
How was that balance? You mentioned, you love sports, you're playing everything under the sun, but you have this commitment, right? You're a college athlete to play tennis. But it sounds like as time went on, you're like, I like a little bit more frisbee. Was that a tough balance? How'd your body hold up doing both sports? What was that like?
My body held up fine. Like I said, I always played multiple sports, and that's all I did. Commitment was tough because I was also a mechanical engineering major. So the first few years it was actually easier because I got great schedules and was able to be done by noon every day with my classes, which meant my whole afternoons were free. So I could get work done and then go play. And after, because most of the time we practice during the day for tennis or early in the morning before classes. So it actually wasn't too hard. It was mainly just tournaments, because tennis, they slowly moved us to playing only on the weekends, so we didn't miss too many classes. So, and tennis is a spring sport as well. So.
A lot of challenges there, and I think that's something a lot of college students face. You're balancing a full class load, you're playing sports, you have a social life in there, but Frisbee's so good, that's why we're here, that's why we're having this conversation. Like I said before we even hit record, it's just two guys talking about Frisbee. There's not much better than that. So that's a really interesting just development into this sport here. And as you progressed, you mentioned you got a little bit better, and you kind of fell in love with the sport of Frisbee, it seems like. Was there a part or a point in college where you're like, okay, this is something I'm pretty good at, I could see what's next or see what's beyond college with this?
I was introduced into the club scene early. I tried out for my first club teams after my freshman year. I played summer league back in Richmond, Virginia. I even tried out for Philadelphia AMP for a day, even though I was coming back just to get my name out there. She's in Colorado now, but Alicia Dixon, she went to Philadelphia University also years before me. So I knew her. So she was like, you got to come out, get your name out there. I was like, okay. And then that just kind of what led me into just playing all the time and just trying out for club teams. And now I'm where I am.
Oh, the power of an invite, right? Just to come out, someone encouraged you to come out. I think that's really something special. You never know where an invite can lead somebody, and obviously had a part to play in your own story here. And you began playing for Philadelphia Phoenix here in 2018. That was your first season with the team. Would you share with me how that came about? How'd you get on the team?
I mean, again, another former Philadelphia University graduate that I played club with, who was always around helping us during college practices. And the year I graduated, I was like, all right, I'll finally go out for the team. I'd been playing highest level club with a citywide special for a year. So I was like, all right, I might have a chance. And then went to tryouts, made it to the last round, and then ended up making the team. And at that point, I was probably one of the last spots taken. And then I was a D2, second D-line cutter. So at that time, it was Greg Martin was on D1, and I came in as his replacement.
Yeah, you make it in the team. You're one of the last spots, you said just right there, and you work so much on that year. And we'll get into your, you know, more recent years in your career too. But what was that first year like playing with the Phoenix?
Oh, man, it was fun. I mean, it was a little bit nervous, but at the same time, coming from my sports background, like basketball, I was playing in front of fans, even if it's rec. Like, you got parents right there, which are almost worse sometimes, yelling at you, going crazy. So there's nothing more fun than being able to go to an away stadium and shut their fans up. My first actual game was in Montreal. They had 1,000 fans. So that was my very first,
wow,
my very first game in what was the AUDL, but UFA now. So
quite the experience coming in there. that must have been pretty special to see there. And that, you know, testament, the sport has grown and grown. More and more fans are showing up. But yeah, you stick with the Phoenix for a few years, and I kind of want to bring us more up to date here. You know, you were on the team, you played your role the first couple of years, but looking at your stats, it looks like season of 2022 and 23, you just skyrocketed, right? You stuffed the stats, mm-hmm. the stat sheets, goals, assists, block. It's quite this jump. What clicked in 2022? What changed? What happened then?
Honestly, kind of COVID helped a little bit. I took big into disc golf before the pandemic started. So I was starting to get into it more. So then once that happened, I was playing like 3-4 days a week. And I just got a new level of power on my throws, with, because you have to be way more detail oriented. Like, you actually have the good form playing disc golf and to throw those, because they're made to fly through the air. So that helped. And I mean, like I said, I'm active. So I was staying in shape, and we got a mini group, and I came back out of COVID into what was 2021 even better. Like, I kind of jumped a couple spots up there, and then going to 22, I think that was more of just like start of a role change. Cause that was the first year I halfway through, like, started moving me over to O-line just to mix things up. Cause we were struggling there a little bit.
Talk to me about this disc golf. There are people out there, I think, that, you know, want the divide, the split between these two different frisbee worlds, if you want to call it that. But obviously, it helped you. Talk to me about how, why it helped you, and make a pitch for that disc golf is good for ultimate players.
I don't need to say it's good for it.
But it helped you. So share with this with me.
At a certain point, though, you can't just like casually do disc golf. Like, you have to kind of dive into it and work on your technique. Cause like I said, it's all about your form and your technique to get the throws down and generate the power and the spin on the disc. So like with COVID, with no one actually playing ultimate, I was able to only do disc golf. So I was only focused on that. And then coming back to ultimate, I was like, oh wow, I am getting way more snap on these discs, way more spin on these. So honestly, if you wanted to get good at disc golf, like, take a couple months off, only do disc golf as like the way you do ultimate now. And then if you came back to ultimate, you would notice the difference. But if you do both, it's hard. Like, I noticed the difference in the throws like immediately, because the form is slightly different.
Interesting. I appreciate the take. Only one at a time, but there are benefits here if you want to give up ultimate for an extended period of time. You heard it from James here, so you know it works. That's awesome there. So yeah, obviously that jump in performance. And I would love to dive a little bit more into what makes Philadelphia Phoenix Philadelphia Phoenix. Like, talk to me about the culture of this team. Obviously, you have a little bit of history going back, winning the championship way back. But team struggled a little bit recently. Struggled to get over the 500 season mark there for wins and losses. Just talk to me about everything Phoenix here.
Yeah. I mean, I think our culture comes from, I mean, the classic Philadelphia underdog. But I think COVID actually hurt us a decent amount, especially on the men's side, because we had a lot of guys who played before who were playing spinners also, that played Philadelphia Patrol, the club team, that were like kind of potentially on the way out, had a couple more years in them maybe. And then COVID happened, and there's a decent amount of them that retired. So there's kind of this like gap in talent of like, we just lost a bunch of the top end men's players in the city. But if you look at the team now where we are, it is all the guys that were like rookies in like 2018 with me that played citywide in like 2017 to 2019. Like, we're the core of the team. So we just, the team really, with Jeff and Christina took over the team. They really wanted to build culture and didn't care if we lost early on. They wanted to build that foundation, that core of players, which is what they did. They're like, all right, we don't care about club. We're the pro team in the city. We have to focus on us. Like, no partnership. If you're committed to this team, you're saying you're committed. Club is secondary, so. And that's the way they did it, was we, like, all right, we're committed. So we had a core guys that were locked in for it. And if you look at where we are now, like, top main players are those guys that are still here that are in year, like, 4, 5, and 6.
Do you think you guys are at a point where you're coming through those growing pains, the development phase where, I mean, last season, I think you guys were 6-6, the year before 6-6. Do you think you're kind of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel of this?
Yeah, definitely. And even though we had the same record, 6-6 the last 2 years, they were a different team. If you actually watch their games, even though we struggled early last year, we played much better in that second half of the season. Even that like Boston game that we lost at home that we needed to win to potentially make playoffs, like if you look at the turnover numbers, it was not that high. Like, it was pretty low. Like, it was a pretty competitive game. We just didn't get any we just couldn't get the disc back if we turned it on offense. That was a real struggle. But that 2023 team would definitely beat the 2022 team, without a doubt, in my mind. We were better. I mean, that 2022 team was not going to beat Carolina Flyers, even if it was on a back-to-back for them.
Yeah, you can easily see the growth there from the number standpoint, even though it doesn't always translate to the record standpoint. And you guys have a very challenging division. You know, you have Empire, you have, you know, Boston, you have Breeze. And those are tough games to go into. From your standpoint, the player standpoint, would you just share, how do you mentally prepare for going into some of these big games, middle of the season, or even a game like you're saying there where it's a must win, you need this to hopefully make the playoffs. How do you prepare yourself as a player for some of those big matchups?
So for me, this comes back to pretty much every sport, basketball, tennis, like, because there's still that individual aspect. You got to win your matchup. And even if the person's better than you on paper, they still got to prove it on the court. They could have an off day. So you can't, if you go into the matchup thinking you're going to lose, you already lost. So even my rookie season, I was like, all right, so-and-so, I don't care if you're the MVP. I'm your matchup. You got to prove it to me first. And then I'm going to make my adjustments. Like, I know I'm good in the air. I know I have decent speed. I'm going to play you this way with whatever the coach's adjustments are. And throughout the game, I'm going to slowly adjust.
That dog mentality.
Yep. And then as like a team, I mean, it happened last year after that Boston loss, and the year before we also started like 0-3 with losing by like 1 point every time, which is like, it's brutal, but we just come together like, all right, we know what we need to do, hold each other accountable, and just have play with that fire, that swagger that we know we have, and we'll be fine.
And you definitely play to your strengths. I like that. And something there, you're good downfield. You got Hobbs, you're talking about, you can get up in the air, and you know, the stats show that. The last two seasons, you led your team in receiving yards. So I think that's like a very, it's a gift. It's a talent there. It takes effort to be able to read a disc, read a play, and then beat the matchup, beat whoever's playing defense on you. Do you have any tips or tricks that you have helped you in your own career of just being able to learn how to read the disc or just be able to beat your matchup in the air downfield?
I guess for beating your matchup, especially if you're like similar height, it's just knowing where you can catch the disc, have a rough idea of what your vertical is. That way, and then you don't even necessarily focus on the other person as much. It's like, if there's that space, like I always try to either body him out if I have the position on him where I don't even have to jump and they have to kind of go over my back so then I can just run onto it and catch it. Or if there's the space, I try to give myself separation so I can go up when I want to, allowing them to body. And it's like, I know where I can catch it, so I'm going to go up when I know I can catch it. And if they happen to also get up and potentially make a play, like, kudos on them. Maybe I need to adjust, but that's rare. So like, knowing where you can catch the disc is first, because then you don't need to worry about your opponent unless they're like taller than you or they show that they have a better vert than you.
I think it's self-awareness, right? That's half of it. We'll talk about self-awareness there, or understanding your own capabilities here. But the other half, I think, would be, you know, hard work. It's time in the gym and workouts and stuff. Do you have any particular favorite Frisbee drills or workouts that you run?
Workouts? I don't know. I do a lot of – my program is actually pretty basic, just like three main lower body, three main upper body lifts. So we have chin-ups, bench press, and overhead press. In lower body, we do front squats or Zercher squats, back squats, and deadlifts. So before the season, going heavy with those, and then always doing my plyos when I can. Maybe not necessarily supersetting it, but then in season, definitely doing like maintaining the weight for deadlifts, like going heavy deadlifts or back squats, and then immediately going in the box jumps or something. Like that's my go-to, is box jumps, box jumps, box jumps.
Get the vertical up. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, you're obviously a beast on the field, James, but off the field, you're also involved in the community, which I think is really special. It's such a gift to give back after you've received so much, I think. And some of those roles, you're a player ambassador and inclusion initiative member for the UFA, which I think is really cool. If you want to share what those roles are, what do they mean to you?
Yeah, so the ambassador program is just like 2 to 3 players from every team. And the league will either like any potential sponsorships or whatever, they'll maybe give us some samples, let us try it out, maybe do a video. We kind of get the first like insight on it. We're kind of like the halfway between the league and our teams. Like the league's like, all right, we're sending out this big email about switching the brand change from AUDL to UFA, like confidential, like, but let them know like this is coming out so people see their emails, because even in 2024, ultimate players don't like to read their emails.
Nothing's changed.
So that, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. And then the inclusion initiative, that was started with Christina Chung, the Philadelphia Phoenix owner, with Matt Smith, their co-chairs, and she asked me to be on it. So we just focusing on like outreach, highlighting players of color in the UFA now, owners, coaches, whatever positions they have. We've got a disc grant program right now that is on our website. So if you're looking to get discs, however many, there's a form you can fill it out, and we'll fill it up to a certain amount. We do an award each year for like I think it's called Be the Change Award now. And just honoring one player from a team nominated by their team, and just like recognizing what they're doing in the community. And they usually get flown out to championship weekend or something like that. participate in the youth clinic that the league does. Just really highlighting the players that are already in the league while trying to grow the league and get more players of color in the league as well.
I like that. Provide good examples or good role models for people to see. I think it's such a good part, highlighting those players, like you said. And, you know, that's your involvement with the UFA on the kind of a league standpoint here. Something the Philadelphia Phoenix has is called the Pass the Disc, which is a initiative between, obviously, you know, Phoenix and a group called Pass the Disc to bring ultimate to youth and underprivileged communities throughout Philadelphia, which I think is really special. Are you involved in any of that, or can you speak to just the impact that that group has done?
Oh, yeah, I'm involved in that. That's we just do free clinics in basically the city with Parks and Recs. And so we just go in, just do our normal clinics that we do with our normal programming, but just for free, and then try to either give them discs or give every player a disc, or like leave like 10 discs with their community center.
And that's just building up the community, the sport of ultimate. I think such a part of that is with the youth first, right? That's how you grow, get more and more players playing in high school or even middle school now. Like when I was growing up, I didn't even really know high school ultimate was a thing until I got to college. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'll do this, you know, and then go from there. And now that I'm kind of been doing this podcast, to hear that people played in high school, I'm like, that's really cool. So it's neat to see that continuously grows. You're involved in that. Phoenix is involved in that. That's how you grow the sport. That's how you build it up. So that's awesome. You guys are doing that. Now I kind of want to turn our focus here really a little bit more to diving into this season. Right. Mm-hmm. You kind of mentioned a little bit tryouts. You're building up the team. I believe you guys put out your official roster just recently here.
Yep.
Where are you guys at as a team as of March now? Like what kind of workouts, what kind of drills, what's the mentality right now?
I mean, we've actually surprised our coaches with how in shape we were. We had our tryouts earlier this year than usual, like the first weekend of January. It was like January 6th. They were trying to get the local college kids that go elsewhere for school that would maybe be in town for Christmas break to try out. We're trying to, Philly's great at breeding ultimate players that go to other cities. So we're trying to keep them local. So
the community, man.
Yeah, so we had about, I think we had like a month, just over a month off between our last round of tryouts and our first practice. So we did our first practice and coaches were kind of surprised at the shape and how well we were looking. Really just hammering in our reset system just so we can improve our flow, so we don't have to take as many big shots down the field if we don't need to, or if the stall gets high, we can reset the disc confidently versus just looking to throw it down the field. We actually just had our player retreat this past weekend. We go down to a camp that one of our former players, Dustin Damiano, worked at and went to as a kid. So we were playing halo ball, volleyball, gaga ball. We drafted teams and just spent the day playing games and then cook, eat dinner, have a little team chat, and then just hang out the rest of the night.
Building bonds. I love it. Sounds like you guys are in a great place, which is encouraging to hear. And the season's, you know, a little over a month, or, you know, just over a month, couple extra weeks on top of that, maybe away. So it's getting excited. What are some of your goals individually for this season?
I mean, obviously the goals are going to come. That's just given my position. Assists, I don't know. That may go up, that may go down. The big one is the completion percentage, trying to get that into the 90s. That's the big one. If I can do that, I think we'll solidly be in the playoff picture. If not, deep in the playoffs/championship weekend.
Sights on championship weekend.
Oh yeah.
I love it. And are these conversations you have as a team, like small groups, maybe on the, you know, team retreat? Is this kind of where these things are broken down from a team standpoint, where these goals are laid out? This is what we're working for together here.
Oh yeah. It's team is, yeah, as a team, this is what we want to do. this is what it's going to take to get there. Our GM actually sent us a video from a TED Talk like 7 years ago, but it was like talking about starting with why. Like, why are we doing this versus like, how are we going to do this? Like, instead of starting with, we want to go to championship weekend, how are we going to do that doing this? Why are you? But if you start with, why are we doing this? You can fill it out. And if you do it the opposite, you'll get there. It's like, oh, why are we doing this? We like having fun. We like playing Ultimate together as a team. How are we going to do this? We can compete in the USA against some of the best players in the world. And then, oh, championship weekend. So we started thinking about it versus, instead of like, all right, we can go to championship weekend, is like, all right, what's the reason? Like, why are we doing this? Why are we playing this sport at such a high level, giving up our weekends?
Absolutely. And so much that you have to be collective, you have to be grouped together in that, or it just doesn't work. It falls apart when not everyone is in the same boat as that. And something I think that goes along with that is kind of where people are at geographically. I know there are teams that struggle with that commitment. You're talking about the club v UFA commitment, but the commitment of showing up to practice more than like once a week or whatever that looks like for you guys, because it shows when you're not together, right? The trust, the chemistry doesn't build as much. And a lot of these teams have players scattered over. What's it like for you guys? Are most of you guys in Philadelphia, or do you have people that travel in? What's that dynamic for you guys?
I would say most of the people are within like 45 minutes of Philadelphia. But I mean, we got guys from New York. We got guys from like almost like Maryland, like Baltimore area, that takes like an hour and a half, 2 hours to get to practice, that are there every week, even on the Wednesdays. Like, they're there on time too. Most of the people are localish, and we have a handful that are traveling an hour more. I'd say maybe 8 or maybe an hour over, and we have like 35 guys on the team, so not too bad.
That's pretty good, I think, for standard of a UFA team. I had on this guy Sam Murphy, plays over in Ireland, and he was saying that every single guy on the team lives in Dublin, Ireland. And then he spent a summer over here playing for Austin Double Wide. And he said those guys were coming in from all over the place. And I mean, him included, he's come from Ireland to play. But it was the dynamic, he said, was stark. You could see that, and you could feel that on the field, on the team. So I think that is a real struggle a lot of teams face, is what kind of commitment, what kind of community do you have together as a team? So it's a real struggle. It's really something I think teams have to look to overcome. Now, something a little different here that I want to make sure we got in is playing during the Philadelphia Eagles halftime. I think that's pretty cool. You guys did it back in January for one of the Eagles games. You know, I know like the Hustle do it for the Atlanta, and it's kind of popping up. I think it's a great way to expose the sport to, you know, tens of thousands of fans. What was it like being in the field with so many eyes on you guys? That must have been a cool experience.
Oh, it's so much fun. And everyone's different. This is my fourth. This is the team's fourth time doing it. And this is actually, it was pretty decent weather this time. Not too cold. We had a day game. It was, I think, 1 o'clock game. So the sun was out most of the time. But a couple years ago, it was like 35 degrees. They're playing the Cowboys, and it was so windy. And the worst part is, we're like watching the game, and then they take us into the back so we can change and like warm up, and then they line us up in the tunnel at the 2 minute warning. So at that point, we have no layers on. We're just standing in the tunnel, and that 2 minutes is always like 10. For some reason, every time we go, it's like there's a touchdown, there's a field goal, there's like 3 timeouts, and we're just standing there just shivering, just like, please end it. And then we get out there, and it's electric. I mean, I've gotten booed by Philly. It's great. I dropped a disc for a layout. That would have been a goal, but I got a great picture out of it, and I got booed by the Philly fans. So
I mean, that's the Philly experience, isn't it?
Exactly.
That is, yeah, that's really cool. I was watching those videos before this interview. That's amazing. That's probably the biggest crowd this, you know, this Frisbee sees. That's so cool. But it grows the sport. And that's something we, you know, repeatedly come up tonight as we chatted. It's working with the community, working with the younger kids, the high school, middle school, putting on those clinics. That's how the sport grows. And I'm sure you've seen it in your own life, how this sport has grown, you know, if, even in the Philly community. Looking ahead, what were some things that you would love to see UFA or Phoenix put together here to grow this sport? How would you, what's your vision for the future of Ultimate?
Oh, I mean, I think we're on the right track. I think it's just, I think in the coming years, UFA, or honestly, all of the pro leagues, UFA, PLWL, will become the top tier of Ultimate for single gendered play. And I think USAU would be high level mixed and focus on college and under. And I think you're slowly starting to see, more and more the top players come to these pro leagues. I think that's where it's going. I mean, because I don't see a lot of club teams going out and running youth clinics all the time, let alone running summer camps all year. Like, come May, mid-May, until the last week of August, there'll be maybe 2 weeks off that we don't have a week-long summer camp being run for the Phoenix. And I'll be running almost all those. So I think that's the path, because once all these kids grow up and if they stick with the sport, that's so many more kids that weren't even playing before, and that's just more and more people. So it's just gonna, at a certain point, it's just gonna blow up.
It's building as a grassroots movement in that way. And even if those kids don't go on to play Frisbee, it's about providing a really good experience that they had. They can look back and say, oh, I had a great time that summer working with James. It was this really good experience. And then it leads, oh, I'm interested in that, or their kids and so forth. Like you're saying, it's building that up from the ground level, which is really special there. Now, if you want to offer a piece of advice, you know, tonight we've talked a lot about trying to build a good team community, good team culture, that it's very important to the team. So if you want to give a piece of advice of how to build that team culture, what would you share?
Ooh, how? It's tough. I think it starts with trying to keep, like we talk about, have as many people as close to your city as possible. Like, I think where I live, I have almost 15 teammates within like a 10-minute drive. I mean, I'm basically like, I'm on the outskirts of the city. So, I mean, there's within walking distance, I've got 10 teammates. And a lot of us are either roommates, friends, like we actually hang out outside of the field without the coaches telling us to, which I think goes along with living near each other. Like, we were friends, we're playing this sport all the time together. So like you mentioned Texas, like it's hard to build a community down there with everything so spaced out. It's just hard. So I mean, if you can, just try to get as much of your talent to be as close as possible. That way you can build and then not be afraid to, like, maybe not be as good for a few years if you're building that core up as the Phoenix did.
Excellent. I appreciate that. And you guys are a living testament to that. So really just wishing you the best of luck in this next season. And this kind of brings us to the end of this interview, James. I really just want to open it up. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah. I mean, the one thing we didn't really talk about coaching wise is I also coach, I'm an assistant coach at University of Penn for their A team. So yeah, I do youth college, and eventually we'll do pro/club when I stop playing.
Okay, we got to dive into that real quick here. How'd you get into coaching in college, the college scene?
So I actually played UPenn my senior year at a tournament, and I knew their coaches. It was Dave Baer at the time, Daryl Stanley, who just retired from coaching Truck, and DC Breeze. He was the coach at UPenn for a few years, then Dave Baer took over. I think Dave Baer was Phoenix, also maybe Spinners. And then I was at a party tournament with him and mentioned, it was like, yeah, like I graduated now, like be interested in like starting to coach college too. And he's like, oh yeah, well, Penn just lost Wally, one of the assistant coaches. So like, if you want to, like we have a spot. So then that fall of 2018, I started coaching with the B team at Penn. So I just happened to mention it to their head coach.
I like it. Again, just putting yourself out there. Don't say no for somebody else. I like that. Just see what happens. You never know. And here you are years later, coaching college, coaching the youth as well. And we'll end here with a different kind of question then for you. What is the most rewarding thing about coaching?
Seeing something finally click for someone. Whether it's a throw, a cut, but seeing something that they're frustrated with and it just clicks all of a sudden.
And you see that person elevate, and that's special. I like that. We'll end on that note there, unless there's something else you'd like to share as well. The floor is yours.
No, I mean, just thank you for having me on. It was good to talk with you. Be on the lookout for the Hoppers this year. We'll be rocking with the 90s theme this year. So
I love it. James, thank you time. So much for everything you shared. Thank you for your incredible story, your journey with this sport, for everything you do for the community, giving back. I think that's one of the most important things anyone can do, and especially in this sport. So thank you for your service, and just really appreciate your time here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And make sure you check out the Breakside Instagram at Breakside_podcast. And this brings us to the end of episode 44. This is David Adamitis with James Pollard. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.